the water temperature off the southern coast of Florida was more than 100 degrees for 2 days in a row this week. It may be a new record for the warmest seawater anywhere in the world. The Atlantic Ocean has been off the charts warm for weeks now, and that's causing the mass bleaching of swaths of coral reefs. Experts say in some parts of Florida's reef, there's been 100% coral mortality. Australia has experienced coral die-offs as well. It began happening at the famous Great Barrier Reef in 2015, when heat waves there caused excessively high water temperatures a few years in a row. Marine biologists watched in horror as their natural wonder, the world's largest and most complex reef system, was decimated. And then they began working to regenerate the reefs. I just returned from a family visit to Australia, and I wanted my children to see the Great Barrier Reef, or what was left of it. It's winter now in Australia, so no excessive heat. We went up to Port Douglas in far north Queensland and out to the reef with a group called Wavelength. We were amazed at the vibrant colours, the incredible fish species, and the healthy-looking corals. After the trip, I spoke with one of their marine biologists, Kate Slaughter, who's originally from San Luis Obispo, California. I began by asking her to tell us what the state of the reef is now.
Well, it's a hard question to answer because the reef is so massive. And just because one spot is looking great doesn't mean that 10 meters down the track isn't looking exactly the same. It's super, super variable depending on all the conditions.
We've heard that there's been bleaching and that large swaths of the reef are bleached. I didn't see much of that today. So tell me about the bleaching process. What's happening and why?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of misconceptions around coral bleaching. It mostly happens in the summer, so we wouldn't have seen any today. It happens when the temperatures get way too hot out there. Corals don't adapt to heat in the same way that humans do. It's not good for them, and so they get very stressed out, and basically all the color in the coral comes from algae, and when they get too hot, they get rid of all their algae, and so all you can see when they've bleached is they've gotten rid of all their color, they've gotten rid of all the algae. You're looking at coral tissue that's clear and white skeleton. Now, they are living still when they've bleached. They're not dead, but they're starving, basically, because they get so much of their nutrition from photosynthesis.
And there's a critical water temperature at which this begins to happen. Yeah. And tell us, go back to 2015, start there and just give us the thumbnail of the warming waters here in far north Queensland, Australia.
Okay, so we started seeing what we call mass bleaching events, and they affected a much larger portion of the reef than just, you know, any kind of localized bleaching event. And come the summer of 2015 to 2016, that year we had a worldwide heat wave that affected up here so horribly. Our normal summer temperature maxes out at 29 degrees Celsius, but that year...
And that's in the water?
Yeah, inside the water. 29 degrees Celsius is what we normally get, but that year we clocked 35 degrees Celsius in the water, which is so much higher than the corals are able to tolerate. And so that one summer, about 70 to 80% of the reef showed some signs of bleaching. Not all of it died, but about 30% did from one summer. And when you have one bleaching event, corals are able to adapt and bounce back and regrow and reproduce, but it takes time. And we haven't had that time. So the very next year, we had another mass bleaching event that wrecked, you know, another large portion of the reef.
And that's because the next year the waters got really hot again.
Yeah, exactly. And normally we get around 24 degrees Celsius here in the winter. That year it didn't not get that low. And so the kind of winter minimum was now raised that year. So it got hot again the next summer and it wrecked the next generation of corals. So in the last 7 years, we've had four mass bleaching events, which has been really damaging to the reef around here in particular.
But there's some hopeful things because you're a marine biologist working here at the reef, as are others. Tell me about the work being done. I saw firsthand today some of your coral restoration projects, and it's kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, absolutely. So us here at Wavelength, where I work, we do a lot of coral planting. So we find corals that have broken off somewhere, if they've been dislodged by someone kicking them or a storm, and then we grow them on our nurseries, these big metal trays in the water, and then eventually we plant them back on the reef. And in the last few years, we've planted 100,000 coral fragments.
And when you're growing them literally on a metal plate, which is floating in the water, affixed down, and then you take those and you hammer them onto parts, and what happens then? Do they kind of grow onto them and keep growing?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we put those corals back onto the reef, it's literally just a low-grade steel nail with a clip in the side. We hammer the nail down, and then we take a big toothbrush and scrub off all the algae, because corals can't solidify onto algae or their skeletons. And then we just clip the coral there. And within, I think, 6 months, the corals will start to grow onto that coral rock there. And within, I think it's 3 years, that coral clip, or the little low-grade steel clip, that will just dissolve, and so it won't even be there anymore, and the corals have solidified back onto the reef.
You know, Kate, I think especially across the US, there's been a lot of heat waves this summer, and people are dealing with those effects on land and dying from it in
Absolutely.
Extreme cases. Why should we care about the coral bleaching?
Well, we should care about the coral bleaching because the ocean is everything to us. We get the vast majority of our oxygen that we breathe today from the ocean. And if parts of the ocean start to die, the thing is, the ocean is so interconnected. A lot of fish will start in the coral reefs, and then they'll move somewhere else, and they'll move somewhere else to more pelagic. And basically, if we lose one step in the process, then it throws the entire ecosystem out of whack. And it connects all the way, you know, from the tropics down to Antarctica, you know, up to the Arctic. Everywhere is fully connected. And so if we lose something, it's just going to have all these flow-on effects, basically.
I want to know, you know, I came to the reefs and snorkeled around at the outer reefs and saw amazing things. As a tourist, am I having a negative impact on the reef? I mean, should people come and see it?
Absolutely. People should come and see it. And I think that people kind of get in their heads a little bit, like maybe going out to the reef isn't the best thing for it. We see people that tread on it, things like that. But at the heart of it, people are only going to protect the things that they've seen and they care about. And if people don't come out to the reef, they almost see the reef as out of sight, out of mind, which is exactly the opposite of what we want. And so kind of the potential negative effects that humans could have are completely negated by just people seeing the reef and experiencing what it's like to be out there and just experiencing the reef in general, which not a lot of people are going to be able to, especially from the States.
When you talked to us on the boat today, you said, you know, your individual actions for the climate do matter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in a bigger sense, what do you feel like as a marine biologist is going to stop these waters from heating? Because it seems like that's the trajectory we're on.
Absolutely. Yeah. So with climate change, it's a product of too many fossil fuels in the atmosphere, which is cooking our planet. And there's a lot of things that we can do on the individual level, like reducing our red meat intake and carpooling to work. But the emissions of individual people are so small compared to the emissions of large corporations. And so just being smart about where you invest your money honestly can make a massive difference, you know, with politicians, with our retirement funds, things like that.
You're a marine biologist. You see a lot of amazingly cool things. And today I saw corals and fish and sharks and things that blew my mind. What's the coolest thing you've ever seen?
This last September, I experienced swimming with a whale shark for the first time. I was fully dry in my clothes at the end of the day, and it was swimming next to the boat, and they're very, very rare around here, and I swam with it for 8 minutes, and it was beautiful. I was crying at the end. That's probably my favorite thing that I've experienced out here.
Wow. My 12-year-old loves sharks so much, he wants to be a sharkologist.
Oh,
I don't even know
so
if that's a term.
Absolutely. Absolutely it is.
And this was a really inspiring day for him. So thank you.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, I'm so glad you guys came out and got to experience it.
My conversation with wavelength marine biologist Kate Slaughter in Port Douglas, Australia.